हरि ओम तत्सत श्री गुरुभ्यो नमः हरि ओम 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 श्री महागणपतये नमः ओम सदा शिव समारंभाम व्यास शंकर मध्यमाम अस्मदाचार्य पर्यन्ताम् वंदे गुरु परंपराम् श्रुति स्मृति पुराणानाम् आलयम् करुणालयम् नमामि भगवत्पाद शंकरम् लोकशंकरम् शंकरम् शंकराचार्यम् केशवम् बादरायणम् सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वंदे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः ओम हरि ओम तत्सत श्री गुरुभ्यो नमः हरि ओम I'm going to take you to straight to the fifth mantra because we are short of 30 minutes. ओम भद्रं कन्ने भिश्रणुयाम देवाः भद्रं पश्येमाक्षभर्यजत्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैस्तुष्टुवागंसस्तनुभिः व्यशेम देवहितैर्यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति नः पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तार्क्ष्यो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु ओम शांति 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 ही सो ब्रह्मा जी हैविंग मेंशन्ड श्रवणम मननम निधिध्यासनम यूजिंग द वर्ड्स श्रद्धा भक्ति ध्यान योग एज द डायरेक्ट मीन्स ऑफ नॉलेज अलोंग विद दैट Also mentioned the Tyagaha, dispassion, Vairagyam as the indirect or supportive means, without which, without accomplishing which, the Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam will not be effective. And having mentioned this, and from fifth verse onwards, in the mantras, 5th, 6th and 7th, in 3 verses, he presents instructions regarding meditation. So in the 5th mantra, let us read the 5th mantra. Even the last class I did it, I know I did not do it thoroughly. So I want to redo the verses today. Vivikta deshe cha sukhasanastaha शुचि समग्रीव शिरःशरीरः अन्त्याश्रमस्थ सकलेन्द्रियाणि निरुध्य भक्त्या स्वगुरुं प्रणम्य हृत्पुण्डरीकम् विरजं विशुद्धं विचिन्त्य मध्ये विशदं विशोकं अचिन्त्यम् अव्यक्तम् अनन्तरूपं शिवं प्रशान्तं अमृतं ब्रह्मयोनिम् तमादि मध्यांत विहीनमेकम् विभुं चिदानन्दम् अरूपमद्भुतम् अरूपम् अद्भुतम् उमास 7th मंत्र उमासहायम् परमेश्वरं प्रभुं త్రిలోచనం
నీలకంఠం ప్రశాంతం
ధ్యాత్వా మునిర్గచ్చతి భూతయోనిం సమస్తసాక్షిం తమసః పరస్తాత్. See, this teacher, in fact, he mentions all three types of objects of meditation. Trivida dhyayaha. Dhyayam means object of meditation. He mentions three types of objects of meditation. Three types means what? All the three represent the Lord. All the three are the Lord only. The object of meditation is the Lord. There is a meditation which is practiced before the study of the Shastram, or until the study of the Shastram becomes complete. Before or during the study of the Shastram, there is a meditation practiced. And there is meditation which is practiced after the study of the Shastram. So the meditation which is to be practiced as a pre-Vedantic study, and meditation to be practiced as a post-Vedantic study. The pre-Vedantic study, or meditation which is to be practiced during the study of the Shastram or before the study of the Shastram, is what must be Ekarupa Dhyanam or Vishwarupa Dhyanam. Ekarupa Dhyanam means invoking the Lord in one given form, as your Ishta Devata, as your deity of your choice. You can have your own choice of deity, and that one form which you choose represents Bhagavan the whole. And there the object is different from you, the meditator. And in Vishwarupa Dhyanam also, even if you see the whole universe as Ishvara, and in there also, the object of meditation is different from you, the meditator. Whereas, that Arupa Dhyanam, the meditation upon Lord as the formless reality, and that meditation is contemplation, and which can be practiced only after you have done Shravanaman Mananam. Without having done Shravanam, without having studied the Shastram properly for length of time, without having done the Mananam, without having reflected upon what you have heard for length of time, heard, understood for length of time, no contemplation, Nididhyasanam, which is not possible. This is the general understanding of meditation anyway. So here, the fifth mantra, you can see the whole of the fifth mantra, and even in the sixth mantra also, whole of fifth mantra, and the first line of the sixth mantra, actually, the tips you need to know for preparing you for meditation, and the pre-preparatory instructions for meditation are given here in the fifth mantra, and also the first line of the sixth mantra. We'll see that here. And what are the instructions here? I told you the four important factors are there. Four important factors means the place of meditation. The condition of the place of meditation, then condition of the body and also the time of meditation. So deshaha kalaha, you know, and also deha stitihi, deha body. And we have this. And also asanam, seat of meditation, how it should be. These four factors he is mentioning here actually. So vivikta deshaha, let me tell you this. Vivikta deshaha means a place of meditation must be, just remember the fifth mantra presents the instructions required for preparing oneself for meditation. So preparatory instructions for meditation. How should the place of meditation be? Whether you are doing Ekarupa Dhyanam or Vishwarupa Dhyanam or Arupa Dhyanam. Whether you are meditating upon the Lord in one form or as the whole universe, or you are meditating upon the Lord's Swarupam, no, the formless Lord as the formless reality, as your own Swarupam, still it must be a clean place, isn't it? So a spiritually clean, a secluded, quiet place. Vivikta deshaha, place, deshaha means a place. It must be a vivikta deshaha. It's the first instruction. Therefore, definitely we have to make it a point to go follow that instruction. Then, asanam, how should the asanam be? How should the seat be? Sukha asanam. Deshaha must be vivikta deshaha. Asanam must be sukha asanam. Sukha asanam means what? Sukha asanam means the seat must be comfortable. Comfortable means what? In Bhagavad Gita, it's elaborately said there, it should not be too high, or it should not be too low, it should not be too hard, but too soft also. Then it should be what? It should be, no, it should be comfortable. The seat where you sit for meditation should be comfortable for you. The position, no, where you sit must be comfortable for you. The sukhasanastaha. Never ever sit in a seat which is not comfortable for you and try to meditate. And don't think, no, I have to really, it's all simple thing, I have to put up with that. It's all nonsense. You have to be intelligent enough to place yourself in a comfortable seat that you can focus. So sukhasanam. Vivikta deshaha, number one point. I tell you, read, take any book. You cannot find different instructions now for preparing yourself for meditation. Therefore, sukha asanam. The third, how should the meditator be? Shuchihi. Shuchihi means the meditator must be a clean person. Clean means must be physically clean, and mentally also he must be clean. The place must be clean also. A clean place, which means definitely it is preferably meditation must be practiced after your shower. Before shower, why should I not meditate? Can't I meditate? I know people who are meditating. If you people somehow for everything is argument, okay? If you want to say if you can meditate, please meditate. Nobody is going to question. But still, what I'm saying, what the Shastra instructs is shuchihi. Okay? Be clean. The body must be clean. Mind must be clean. Then, now he finished with the place and the sthanam, the seat, asanam. Now he goes to the physical body, isn't it? What should be the position of the body, condition of the body? How should it be kept, isn't it? Definitely not bending and all that. No, that's why it is said here, samagriva shira shariraha. Samaha means in one straight line, perpendicular to the floor, which means it must be one straight line. What should be one straight line? Trunk of the body, isn't it? Then neck and the head. All the three must be in one straight line when you sit for meditation. Definitely no bending and all that. One has to sit straight, keeping one's head, body and neck in one straight line. So body must be kept in one straight line. Head, neck and body must be kept in one straight line. This is samashira griva shariraha. Is it? Shariram. So sama griva shira shariram. You can say that. All of them must be in one straight line. Then we have to include what is not said here. Also I'm including here. Okay, body. Then we have to include what here? Not only the physical body, what about your breath? How should the breath be? So breath also actually should be slow and smooth. Slow means it must be smooth. The breathing must be smooth there. So smooth breathing. Then mind and how should the mind be? How should the intellect be? The meditator's mind must be the mind of a sannyasi. The meditator's mind must be mind of a sannyasi. How do you say that? Here he mentions antyashramaha. Antyashramastaha, the verse says. Antyashramaha means, the last ashrama. What is last ashrama? Sannyasashrama. Sannyasa ashrama means what? Not that all of you are not expected to wear saffron clothes. The mind must be of the sannyasi, which means when you want to seriously practice meditation, definitely whenever you sit for meditation, your mind must be thinking of subject matter of the teaching of the shastram, and then you must be thinking of Bhagavan, then Guru. Other than this, the mind is thinking of anything other than Guru or Shastram or Bhagavan, that mind cannot be successful in meditation, and that meditation will not be effective. Therefore, Antyashramaha means what now? The final Ashramaha. So, Antyashramastra means the mind of meditator must be like the mind of a sannyasi, which implies the mind must be focus, thinking of, dwelling upon things associated with the Guru, Shastram and Bhagavan. So now you know how the meditator's body should be, how his breath should be, how his mind should be. How his sense organs should be. The sense organs also must have been withdrawn from everything. If the mind is totally focused in Shastra, subject matter of the Shastram, or teaching, or Guru, or some form which is associated with the Bhagavan, then naturally, sense organs also withdrawn. Withdrawn sense organs. Now, intellect. How should the intellect of the meditator be? The intellect of the meditator should have the conviction, should be 100% convinced of the effectiveness of meditation. Should be convinced of the usefulness of meditation. I am going to practice meditation and this meditation will definitely bless me with mental steadiness. It will make my mind relatively tranquil. This meditation definitely will later on prepare me for contemplation. The contemplation will definitely bless me with the ascertained, unforgettable vision of Paramatma. That conviction, isn't it? One must have the conviction. There's not any doubt. Be it comes and talks to you something, immediately you should get confused about it. Whoever comes and talks to you anything, you must be convinced. You must have that conviction that meditation is effective. The Ekarupa meditation, what can the meditation upon a given form will bless me with? What can the meditation upon the Lord as the whole will bless me with? What can the Lord as the formless reality will bless me with? You should know the details very clearly. That is why Shastra study alone can bless you with this understanding. So that with the understanding, you must have that conviction. Meditation will definitely bless me with the effect, expected effect, result. That must be the intellect of the meditator. Now you know, isn't it? So body, mind, intellect, sense organs, and breath, pranas. This is all instructions given here. Then, that is why, sakala indriyani nirudhya, sakala indriya nirodha means withdrawal of sense organs from their corresponding objects. Then, all these instructions which are given here in this Upanishad are also given, borrowed by Bhagavad Gita and elaborately presented in Bhagavad Gita also. But here what Bhagavad Gita does not present here is, one more thing is, Swagurum Pranamya. Isn't it? Also, bowing to one's teacher with reverence and devotion. Before you start with meditation, also think of your teacher and bow to the teacher with devotion, then start. Why should I do that? Because whatever you are associating yourself with, that will have the effect, isn't it? It's a law of association. Suppose if you think of Guru, and the Guru will remind you only the teaching, then the teaching will be useful for your teaching, means again it is favorable for your meditation. Therefore, for that purpose, one should really bow to one's teacher and devotion before one starts one meditation. Again, teacher means not simply all the thinking of the teacher's form and all that. Just to expressing a reverence to your teacher, you should start. I'm not asking to think about, meditate upon the teacher. Just one bow to your teacher, that's all, finished. Then you go to Shastram. Sometimes what happens, people then start meditating upon teacher. That is a useless thing. That is why we should not be very careful here. When it said, Guru Pranamya. Therefore, these are the instructions. Then, what should be the time of meditation? Okay, time of meditation. Time of meditation. See, whenever one should meditate in a time when one's mind is relatively tranquil and calm. For one to have that relatively tranquil, calm mind, the mind condition of the mind is favorable for meditation, is a sattvic state of mind. That is said here. I'm going to do that now. Which means, when your mind will be sattvic in condition, when do you think your mind can have a sattvic state of mind? Which means, definitely not when the mind entertains the rajasic state, or when the mind is in tamasic state. Tamasic state means you will be very drowsy and sleepy and dull, or you extremely, you will be totally passive. Or rajasic means you will be very restless and very active. So those two states of mind are not conducive for meditation. The mind must be, it has entertained the sattvic state, which means predominantly it must be sattvic. That's why we preferably, when you get up, sleep whole night well, at least have some good rest. Then when you wake up from sleep and after shower, that is when you are fresh. You are not predominantly rajasic. After 9 o'clock, you have to pack your lunch and then you have to rush. Not that time, isn't it? That's why immediately after, when you wake up from sleep, immediately you have your shower, and that is the right time. Is it? That is said in the how one's mind, the time of meditation should be chosen in such a way that the mind is predominantly sattvic. It is not rajasic or tamasic. Isn't it? It's not even natural for the mind to be rajasic and tamasic. Now, after 1 hour, you'll all be tamasic. That's why I should stop also. And after, if I ask you, all would have been again very rajasic, very busy, active, running around. But this is slowly now settling, isn't it? It is said in the next mantra now. We'll see that. So how the... Look at this. In the first two lines. Hrit pundarikam virajam vishuddham. Vichintya madhye. Vishadam vishokam. So in these two lines, okay? So the four lines of the fifth mantra and these two lines of the sixth mantra, all of them together actually present the instructions for preparatory instructions for meditation. And here Hrit Pundarikam. I told you already, Pundarikam means lotus. In Sanskrit language, many words to mean the lotus flower. Pundarika means lotus. And Hrit means Hridayam. Hridayam means heart. But a physical heart is a Golakam. And mind is the Indriyam. Mind is the internal subtle power, which is because of which all the sense powers function, all the powers of organs of actions function, because of the presence of which alone even the pranas function, that much subtler power. That's the indriyam, mind, isn't it? But according to science, the locus of mind is brains. According to Vedanta Shastram, the locus of mind is the physical heart, which means the physical part, the Golakam, is perceptible if we if we open our chest, we can release, our heart is perceptible. But the mind, indriyam, is imperceptible. Isn't it? Therefore, Hrit Pundarikam here means, implies what? The mind obtaining in the lotus heart. Why it is lotus? Why lotus is here compared? Why there is the comparison of the lotus? Because lotus is known for its purity, lotus is known for its attraction, lotus is known for its even beauty. Therefore, our mind also should be, how? Mind should be pure and clean. That's this idea. Isn't it? A clean and the pure mind is an attractive mind also. Therefore, it must be pure and clean. One of the meanings that is given. And we can also say, because the lotus, this heart looks like lotus, isn't it? They say the lotus bud, they say. Anyway, we don't want to get confused, all those things. But always, why lotus is likened to here, is used? Why do they compare the lotus, the heart with the lotus? Because they say it must be soft and desirable, lovable, pure and attractive. That's the idea. So, Hrit Pundarikam. Then, how this mind should be, isn't it? Now he says, now turn attention towards the mind. Now you have understood the instructions, preparatory instructions presented in the fifth mantra. Now let us turn attention to the mind and how the mind should be. All these words actually describe the condition of the mind. Look at this. It must be virajam. See, the last class explained, I get the literal meaning of the word virajam. Please understand the word virajam, vishuddham, vishadam, vishokam. All these four words describe the condition of the mind obtaining in the lotus heart. I'm repeating it because I said the meaning of all the words together. So, because all these words sound like the word which reveal the nature of the reality also. So, here it talks about the mind only. All these four words describe the condition of the mind. How the mind should be. It must be virajam. See, the word mind is not mentioned there. Only heart is mentioned. So, we should understand, now with the help of the teacher, who has heard this from his or her teacher, the word Hrit Pundarikam, the lotus heart, should be understood to be, what now? Here the mind obtaining in the lotus heart, must be virajam. Viraja means it must be free from agitations and restlessness. Virajam manaha, a mind which is free from restlessness and agitations, which means the mind which does not, which is not predominantly rajasic, which is not predominantly rajasic. Is it clear? Rajasic means very active and restless and agitated. Okay. The next. Then Vishuddham. The mind must be Vishuddham. Vishuddham manaha. Virajam manaha, then Vishuddham manaha. Vishuddham means what? Vishuddham means, literally it means pure. But here we say the mind must be free from dullness and drowsiness. Which means the mind should not be, you know, predominantly tamasic. Isn't? So predominantly non-tamasic mind, predominantly non-rajasic mind. Is that what now? Virajam manaha, Vishuddham manaha. See why I am telling you all these words, repeating? Because these words literally have their own meanings. But in this context, these words, what do these words mean? It should be very clear. Vishuddham manaha, mind which is not tamasic, which is not dull and drowsy. So based on this condition of the mind alone, we decide the time of meditation. Understand that it must be early in the morning or in the evening, no? At the time of sunset, etc. Okay. So virajam, vishuddham. If the mind should not be predominantly rajasic and tamasic, if the mind should not be too restless and agitated, or it should not be too dull and drowsy, which are sleepy, then how should the mind be? Isn't it? We say also vishadam. Vishadam means the mind must be predominantly sattvic. So those two words, the earlier words, virajam, vishuddham, convey how the mind should not be. And vishadam says how the mind should be. If it should not be predominantly rajasic, if it should not be predominantly tamasic, then it must be predominantly sattvic. How is it mentioned? Vishadam. Vishadam manaha. One word, okay? Vishadam means the mind which is tranquil and calm. So, the tranquil, calm mind, it can't be absolutely calm, but relatively calm and tranquil mind definitely is a cheerful mind. Therefore, Vishokam. Vishokam means non-worrying, cheerful mind. When you sit for meditation, suppose you're worried about something, do you think you can concentrate? And I was saying, it's a very simple thing. Vishokaha literally means free from sorrow. A sorrowless mind. That's literal meaning. Okay? But here we can take relatively, I mean, the mind which is cheerful, non-worrying, cheerful mind. Non-worrying. Cheerful mind. Which mind can be, you know, mind can be free from worry and thereby it can be cheerful? The mind which is calm and tranquil. And which is the mind which is predominantly sattvic? And which is that mind which is not predominantly rajasic, restless or agitated, and which is not tamasic, which is neither too dull or neither too active. Is it clear now? These four words you have to remember. And such mind, now vichintya madhye. And where do you see this mind? You bring your attention to the mind obtaining in the lotus heart, where? In the middle of your chest. Madhye. Madhye means the chest. It's understood. It's you bring attention to that mind. Is it clear? Take care of these instructions. So here ends the pre-preparatory instructions for meditation. Place of meditation, time of meditation, condition of the body, breath, sense organs, mind, intellect. Understood now? All these instructions are over here. Now, he is going to start the meditation now. Now, one has to start the meditation. Having got oneself prepared, you know, as per these instructions, one has to, may one start meditation. Where does it begin now? From this third line onwards. What should one meditate on? Here, the teacher, because I told you already, you're expected to have done some study before. Therefore, he begins with what? Arupa Ishvara Dhyanam. Arupa Ishvara Dhyanam means what? Meditation upon the formless Lord as the formless reality, the absolute reality, Brahman. Is it clear now? So, Brahma Swarupa Dhyanam. And if you should know the Swarupa of Brahman, the absolute reality, you must have known what? The Swarupa of yourself. And actually here, this what is the Swarupa of the absolute reality? It is impossible for one to dwell upon, meditate upon, contemplate upon the Swarupam of the nature of reality, isn't it, Brahman, without knowing the nature, isn't it? The meditation upon reality must be in terms of its Swarupam. And the Swarupam, how do you know? You must have done Shravanam, you must have done Mananam, then you can understand these words. That's why the only instructions here. So first is Achintyam. No, Achintyaha. Achintyaha. So Arupa Ishvaraha. The Lord who is the formless reality. Achintyaha. First one word comes. So what is the reality here? You all know. You must be very clear. Through Shravanam and Mananam, you must have understood this Brahman, the limitless reality, the absolute reality, is another than the consciousness. And how did you arrive at? You arrived at consciousness as the Swarupam of the very I, the truth of very content of I, which means you know what consciousness is, and you arrived at consciousness not as an object, definitely as the very truth of the meditator. Therefore, Achintya means what? Achintya means the reality which is not an object of knowledge. Not an object of knowledge means what here? It is not an object of thought. So, unobjectifiable, inconceivable, reality, Achintyam. How consciousness is not an object of knowledge, how it is non-objectifiable. Isn't it? That's all we have to see later on. But now, how one should meditate upon? You have to see the meaning of this word. Is what is Nididhyasanam? Seeing the every word here is a Brahma Swarupa Lakshanam. A word revealing the very nature of the reality. Achintyam means non-objectifiable, inconceivable. Then we say now, avyaktam. Or you can say, avyaktaha ishvaraha. Achintyaha ishvaraha. Means arupa ishvara. Then avyaktam. Avyaktaha means what? Again, avyakta means here, imperceptible. So, mano agocharam means not available for thought perception and not available for sense perception also. Therefore, avyakta here means the reality, the conscious, which is not available for perception, through sense perception. Imperceptible, avyaktam. Then, anantarupam. This anantarupam, we leave it, okay? Come, only these two words, take these two words, achintyam and avyaktam. third word is Shivam. I said again, Shivam also is what? Shivam, if you know, Shivam actually implies the reality is of the nature of auspiciousness. If it is of the nature of auspiciousness, means what does it mean? Being auspicious means being sorrowless, being free from sorrow, and then not being the cause of sorrow. Is it? And being the very truth of the sorrow. Truth of the sorrow means what? That which lends very existence to the sorrow, in which sorrow is resolvable. What is consciousness? Consciousness is the very truth of the sorrow, which lends existence to the sorrow, which means wherein sorrow is resolvable. And then consciousness is what? Definitely is not that which causes the sorrow. It's not a cause of the sorrow. Not the cause of the sorrow. And we say consciousness is free from sorrow. Consciousness does not have sorrow, isn't it? So sorrowless, it is not a cause of the sorrow, and it is the source, wherein sorrow will be resolved. So that, this is how we have to understand the meaning of the word auspiciousness. And that is what is meant by the word Shivaha. Yesterday also said in the temple. So now, then Prashantaha. Arupa Ishwaraha is Prashantaha. Prashantaha, when you say, no, absolutely tranquil. Tranquility is the very nature. What noise, what disturbance does consciousness create? Consciousness does not create any disturbance, does not cause any noise, isn't it? Consciousness is of the nature of tranquility. Shanti Swarupam is what? Prashanta. Understand now? Therefore, absolute peace. You know, consciousness and absolute peace, consciousness can never become peaceful. Why? Because it is already the peace. Prashantam. Prashanta, then Amrutaha. Amrutaha means what? Immortal. Immortal means what? Immortal means eternal. Eternal means what? Timeless. Timeless means what? Which is free from birth, death and changes. The word changeless, isn't it? Amrita. Therefore, physical body has a beginning, therefore it definitely has an end. Whereas consciousness is free from beginning and end, birth and death and change, for it is ever immortal. The forms come and the forms go. But consciousness is free from forms, for it is Amrita, immortal. Then Brahma Yonihi. Brahma, it is infinite cause of the entire universe. Brahma Yoni means infinite cause, limitless cause of the universe. Cause of everything here. The Brahma Yoni. There's no cause. Consciousness is not the cause of the universe. But there's no cause other than consciousness for the universe. Consciousness is not the cause of the universe. But the cause of the universe is consciousness. Why do you say that? Because you have to think very well. See, water, you can't say water is the cause of the ocean. But the cause of the ocean is water. Why do you say? Because water exists means ocean exists. Without water, ocean cannot exist independently. So anything which has dependent existence, the effect always has dependent existence. So that which has an if dependent existence is as good as an effect. As good as an effect. That which has independent existence is as good as the cause. Is it clear? Now, existence of light is the existence of the opaque. Why do you say that? Light does not create the mic. But if there is no light, means the opaque, even if it is here, it is as good as non-existent. Why? Because it can never shine. And if they can never shine, means it can never have the status of being existent. If it should enjoy the status of being existent, it should shine. For it to shine, there must be light. If it shines, it shines only in the presence of the light. Therefore, existence of light is the existence of the opaque. Therefore, this opaque, being dependent on the light for its existence, now, to come to light, thereby to enjoy existence, it is as good as the effect. The light, whereas light is not dependent on the opaque to come to light. Therefore, independent, isn't it? Therefore, we say light is as good as the cause. Is it clear? Similarly, here consciousness also is infinite reality, limitless reality. Brahma is what? Now, that infinite. It's infinite as well as the cause of the universe. That which enjoys the status of being the cause of the universe. That is what is simple. The word yonihi means cause. Is it clear? Mm-hmm. Brahma yonihi. Now, see these words. Achintyaha, avyaktaha, shivaha, prashantaha, amritaha, Brahma yonihi. How many words have you come across now? I have to search for the mantras. Okay, now one more word. Come to the next line now. Now, sixth verse itself, come to the next line. Tatha artham. There are two different versions of these verses. Some verse books have tam adi madhyantara vihinam. Or tatha, I got another word also is there. Now, see, next one is Adi Madhya Anta Vihinaha. All these words are defining words which reveal Lakshana Padani. These words reveal the nature of Brahman, the limitless reality, the consciousness, which is otherwise meant by the term Arupa Ishwaraha, or the Lord as the formless reality. Adi Madhya Anta Vihinaha is another one word. Vihina means devoid of. Now, Har Vihinaha means who, Wahu, bead, and Petros. No, Petros has some hair. Har Vihina. And you know, last week I saw our Anuj Danta Vihina. He became one tooth fell. Vihina means devoid of. And sometimes we all become Buddhi, intellect, Vihina, isn't it? So Vihina means devoid of, without. So here, this reality, the Arupa Ishwaraha, the Lord as the formless reality, is devoid of, free from Adi, Madhya, Anta. I mean, it has no beginning, it has no middle, it has no end, isn't it? Means what? It is formless, therefore it has no beginning, middle and end. Which means it is timeless. Again, all repeated only. Then timeless, eternal, you have to go back to this again. It is beginningless and endless and changeless also. So, Adi, Madhya, Anta, Vihinaha. Then Ekaha. Ekaha means secondless. Secondless means there is nothing else absolutely, you have to add this adverb, absolutely, there is nothing else other than consciousness. Why do you say absolutely, you have to add this term? Relatively, there is something, there seems to be something. If I say, when you see the ocean, that just all that is here is just the water, nothing else. When you say, what do you mean by that? Absolutely, there is just the water. But suppose you ask me, how to account for ocean, the name and form ocean and waves. Relatively, seemingly, they are there. Absolutely, they are not there. How do you say? You remove the water, they will disappear. Therefore, they do not have countability. The forms, the form ocean, the forms waves, all the different varieties of forms which see, all these forms actually are non-countable. They lose their countability. Why? They can enjoy countability only if they can exist even when the water is not there. They don't have countability. In the absence of water, the form, all these forms, wave form, ocean form, will all lose their existence. Therefore, they don't have countability. Therefore, they are not there absolutely. But because they're available for perception, they do exist. We say only relatively, they have seeming existence. They have empirically, relatively, they have seeming existence. But therefore, absolutely, there's only water with reference to ocean. Similarly, with reference to the whole jagat, my God, mind-boggling, innumerably countless forms and names and gross. Everything is enjoyable, experienceable, enjoyable, isn't it? Perceptible. Though so many forms, but still, according to Shastram, they're all just non-countable names, forms. Enjoying some names, isn't it? Okay, what is there is absolutely what is there is just the consciousness. Ekam. Ekam means what should you say? Non, the secondless, then non-dual. Secondless, non-dual. That which alone is absolutely, secondlessly, non-dually is what? Ekaha. Ekaha. Then you leave the verb vibhu again. Then chid ananda, chid anandaha. So this form, the Lord as the formless reality is what? Chid is just nothing but consciousness. Chid. And not a chid, an anandaha, fullness. This Ishvara, this formless Lord who is the reality, whose sarupam is what? Here, pure consciousness, and which is of the nature of fullness. Consciousness is of the nature of fullness. Don't say fullness is of the nature of consciousness. Consciousness is of the nature of fullness. You can't say heat has fire. Consciousness is of the nature of fullness. I can say with reference to ocean, water is of the nature of fullness. Why? It is the water, act the substance, which being full or filling the ocean is the very nature. Doesn't make any, why does the, suppose the question comes, why does the water fill the ocean? Why is it full of ocean? Hey, that's how it can be. Being the very existence, being the very reality, being the very truth which lends existence to that form ocean, the form which is known by the term ocean, it has to fill, it has to pervade everything, isn't it? Therefore, being pervasive, pervasiveness, fullness is the very nature of the reality, the water with reference to ocean. Similarly, being full, filling are being pervasive. Pervasiveness is the very nature of consciousness with reference to this whole jagat. Therefore, we say consciousness, which is of the nature of fullness. The Lord whose Swarupam is consciousness, which is of the nature of fullness, is what? Chidanandaha Ishwaraha. Then, easy. Arupaha. Arupaha, easy, isn't it? I don't need to tell you the meaning. We've been talking about talking. No, formless. What form does consciousness have? Formless. That which is of the nature of formlessness. We have to use this full noun. All swarupam. Then, adbhutaha. Adbhutaha means wonder. A great wonder. An amazingly wonder. Why? Because, why it is wonder? This reality, which is of this nature, which is seriously being sought, is the very swarupam of the seeker. Every seeker's swarupam is the sought. That is why it's a wonder. Why it's a wonder? Arupaisha is a wonder. Why? Because it is just you. It's your own swarupam. What is sought happens to be the very swarupam, the truth of the very seeker. It is a great wonder. Okay? So now, you can see all these words. Now I tell you. Now let us see those. Achintyaha, avyaktaha, anantaha. No, sorry. Achintyaha, avyaktaha, shivaha, prashantaha, amrutaha, brahmayonihi, adimadhyanta vihinaha, yekaha, chidanandaha, arupaha, adbhutaha. The 10 words. Okay, 10 words now. Seeing the meaning of these 10 words. And you should really see. That is why repeatedly, even if you feel bored, my God, what has been taught earlier is again and again repeated. You know, but still we have repeatedly when you listen. The repeated listening makes the mind subtle. The subtler mind can again appreciate much subtler and fact. Isn't it? Something subtle will just again become clear. Therefore, here, seeing the meaning of these 10 words, seeing the consciousness, understanding consciousness, isn't it? As the meaning of these 10 words. What is consciousness? Arupa Ishwaraha, a formless Lord. And the truth of the formless Lord. Formless Lord as the formless reality. These 10 words is what now? This swarupam, where do you see? How do you see? It is your own swarupam. You arrive at consciousness itself as the very swarupam of the I. Then you understand the consciousness, is of this nature. So dwelling upon the meaning of these words is actually dwelling upon your own swarupam. This is Arupa Ishwara Dhyanam, which is contemplation, Nididhyasanam, Arupa Ishwara Dhyanam. Only these 10 words. Meaning of these 10 words. And you can dwell upon the meaning of these 10 words. You just where is your mind? Just seeing or focusing your attention on the mind. You've already prepared your mind. And you're focused, you're clean, and you're disturbance-free, you're convicted of the benefit of meditation, and you are relatively you entertaining a sattvic state of mind, and you are focusing attention on the meaning of these words, which means you are seeing the meaning of these words. This is actually contemplation. Arupa Ishvara Dhyanam, which will be possible only if you have done adequate amount of Shravanam and Mananam. So immediately, oh my God, Swaminiji, you say it is contemplation, it's not possible for us, immediately don't come here, which means you only understand here. Quietly, we have to continue with our Shravanam for some more time. Now, the two words now, see that the third line, Ananta Rupaha, and in the last line, Vibhu. Just take these two words, Ananta Rupaha and Vibhu. These two words, actually, meditating upon meaning of these two words will be meditation on Vishwarupa Ishvara or Aneka Rupa Ishvara. The only just these two words, Ananta Rupaha and Vibhu. You have to say, take these words separately and understand. The 10 words are given, isn't it? Revealing the nature of reality, the consciousness. Seeing the meaning of those 10 words becomes what? Arupa Ishvara Dhyanam, which is contemplation. Is it clear? Now, just these two words alone, Vibhu Ananta Rupaha, seeing the meaning of these two words will be Vishwarupa or Aneka Rupa Ishvara Dhyanam, wherein you are meditating upon the Lord as an object of meditation. So, okay, now what does the word Ananta Rupaha mean? See, Rupam means form. Anta means end. Ananta means endless. Okay, one who is of the innumerably countless forms. One who appears as innumerably countless forms. The one who is absolutely, one who is of the nature of formlessness, but the formless reality which alone appears as innumerably countless forms is what? Ananta Rupaha. In Srimad Bhagavatam, in Narayaniyam, there's a text called Narayaniyam. And there, a beautiful, there's a, Krishna was born and then they're waiting. And the Garga Muni was brought there. He was received there in the house to name for the naming ceremony of Lord Krishna. This is a story, okay. And Garga Muni, he came and he knew to Sakshat Bhagavan, you know, Krishna is not an ordinary thing, isn't it? Just a story, don't take it seriously. And he was thinking, but they were all thinking, what is the name he's going to give? Very, very interesting. They're all very much interested in which name he's going to give this little boy. And he was praying to Krishna himself, my God, your Ananta Nama. Katham Nama Kurve, Ananta Namnaha, Katham Nama Kurve. How am I going to name this boy who is Ananta Nama? He says, and then he thinks, oh, let me give this word name Krishna. You know why? Krish means Karshati, to attract, to draw. And he added the affix Na. And Krishna means that which is of the nature of, that which is all attractive, that which can attract, that which draws all the minds towards itself. All attractive. He gave them Krishna. And what is it which attracts all, draws all the minds towards itself? Happiness, fullness. Isn't it? Therefore, Krishna is equal to all attractive. All attractive is equal to happiness. Therefore, Krishna is equal to happiness. And he gave the name to Krishna. Understand? Suddenly the thought came, so I want to say this. So here, now, so therefore, Ananta Rupaha means what now? Now, the whole universe is Ishvara only. Every form is Ishvara's form only. You're seeing everything is, all the forms are Ishvara. Ananta means you can't just, that's why inexplicably, undescribably, isn't it? Innumerably, the countless forms constitute the whole, and the whole universe is, whole universe consisting of innumerable forms is Ishvara's forms only. Ishvara's form. That is why we, now that's why the Vishu Sahasrama, the first word is Vishwam. First name of the Lord is Vishwam, the universe. Isn't it? Therefore, Anantarama, when you say, here again, you don't see Anantarupaha means, who is the Lord here? Lord, one who is in the form of everything. Everything is Ishvara, you say. But still, you see the whole world as what? As an object. It's much better. But still, you see the world as a what? The whole universe is Ishvara. You think of the meaning of this word, Anantarupaha. But still, do you see Ishvara as your own Sorupam? No. You are the meditator. And what is object of meditation? Ishvara. And what is Ishvara's form? All the forms. The whole universe. Still, it is external to you. Is it clear? This is just these two words, Anantarupaha. Therefore, Vibhuhu. Vibhuhu, also I gave the explanation already. Vividham bhati iti vibhuhu. The one who shines as everything. The one who is in the form of all, one who is, who alone appears as all the forms, one who shines as everything, is Vibhuhu. Literally the word Vibhuhu means the Lord. But here which Vibhuhu implies what? Aneka Rupa Ishvara. Ananta Rupaha implies what? Ananta Swarupaha means, that is, Arupa. Ananta Rupaha means, Vishwarupa. Is it clear? Rupa means form. Swarupa means nature. Rupam, Swarupam. Is it clear? Ananta Swarupaha means what? One who is of the nature of limitlessness. Ananta Rupaha means what? One who appears as all the forms. So they're just seeing the meaning of, dwelling upon the meaning of these two words is what? Seeing the Lord as the Vishwarupa, one who is of the form of the universe. It's the Vishwarupa Ishvara Dhyanam. Now we move on to the next mantra. So this mantra is complete, isn't it? So fifth mantra and sixth mantra. In the fifth mantra, present instructions, pre-preparatory instructions for meditation. And the sixth mantra presents the words, the meaning, presents the contemplation. Understand? Then what should one focus on? What should one meditate on? And there he also then just mentions two words for Aneka Rupa Ishvara Dhyanam. Many words, 10 words for Arupa Ishvara Dhyanam. Actually, that is what is the final step of meditation, isn't it? Which alone, Arupa Ishvara Dhyanam is the actual Dhyanam, contemplation, which alone will bless you with the actually moksha. But Anekarupa Ishvara Dhyanam or Vishwarupa Ishvara Dhyanam will prepare you for that Arupa Ishvara Dhyanam. Okay. Now we'll go to the next mantra. All the pages have changed. Seventh mantra. Okay. உமா சகாயம் பரமேஸ்வரம் பிரபும்
திரிலோச்சனம் நீலகண்டம் பிரசாந்தம்.
ஓகே, டில் தென் சோ உமா சகாயா. நவ் நெக்ஸ்ட் வேர்ட்ஸ் கம், டேக் ஆல் நாமினேட்டிவ். Yesterday I said objective, no? Now I'm giving all nominative words. Uma Sahayaha, word number one. Parameshwaraha, number two. Prabhuhu. Trilochanaha. Neelakantaha. Again Prashantaha. Here also Prashantaha comes. See, it's all Yekar. These are the words which are prescribed for Yekarupa Dhyanam. These are the words prescribed for Ekarupa meditation, meeting upon Lord as Lord in given form. For example, suppose if you are exposed to our Puranic studies, you will know what is here. Who is the Lord here? Lord Shiva. Lord again, don't Shiva. The word Shiva means what? Something different, isn't it? You know the meaning of the word Shiva. So Uma Sahayaha. Even here also, we can give two meanings. You can take these words for Arupeshwara also, as Arupeshwara also, Dhyanam also. But here, we should, let us take it as, these are the words prescribed for Ekarupa Ishwara Dhyanam. So, Uma Sahayaha. I'll show you the picture tomorrow. Uma Sahaya means consort of Parvati, Uma. Umapati, husband of Uma. Literal meaning, a Shiva, some form. Literal meaning. Again, you have to, when you see the form, okay, a Parvati, a woman, and the Shiva, the man, when you see, again you should see what? Not just you are seeing, oh, one man and woman. No. There you see was what now? This woman, the form of the woman represents the Maya Shakti. It is symbolic. Is it? It symbolizes the absolute power, the material cause of the universe. The form of the man symbolizes the intelligent cause of the universe. Which means, even though I see here as Shiva and Parvati, as Uma and her husband, but really speaking, these two are personifications of abstract two causes, isn't it? Material and the efficient cause of the universe. But still, and then these two causes actually are what? Actually, only one reality. Only reality alone manifests as two causes, and the two causes are personified here as what? Uma and Parvati. So here the Lord is who now, even the Parvati you take, just remove. You just see as the one who is endowed with the creative power, Maya Shakti. That which is endowed with Maya Shakti, Chichaktihi. The consciousness which is endowed with the creative power or manifesting power is called Uma Sahayaha. Is it clear? And you can think, understand this, because you are doing Shravanam, you understand these things, and when you dwell upon this form also, you don't simply see as this, you know. This painting is better than the one Bede has, isn't it? That is also Shiva. Not like that. Understand the significance. What does this form represent? You focus attention on this particular form, but you're still thinking of what it represents. Is it clear? Umasaya sahayaha. Or you can say, in fact, this Maya Sahitam Brahma, the consciousness which is endowed with this power, creative power, manifesting power. Then Parameshwaraha, the most exalted Lord. You just say Parameshwara, I mean, you see just one form in front of you, but still you can think, what now? It's the absolute, any form for that matter, not only Shiva, any whichever form, your Ishta Devata, whichever you can have your own choice of your own deity, whichever Lord you are seeing, suppose you see Ganesha or Christ or any form you see in front of you, you see that form as what? Really? Lord is not that form, but this form is, the form stands for the absolute Lord, the whole. See that form, you know, is Parameshwaraha. Then Prabhu. Again, Prabhu means what now? The source or origin of all the beings. That from which I'm seeing this form here, this, even though I see this form, but this form is what actually, this is the form which represents, always representation, okay? It symbolizes, it represents the reality from which all the beings have come into existence. And in which everything remains sustained and in which everything resolves. You see is it clear? When you see any given form also, you don't just see the form. You see the meaning of these words. Doesn't matter which form you are focusing attention on. You can have your own choice of deity. But still you see that particular deity which you are focusing attention on. You know, not simply seeing the form here. You can sit in front of the murti, but still you are thinking of the meaning of these words. Prabhu. No, the reality from which everything comes into existence. In which everything remains sustained. Into which everything resolves. You don't know the meaning. You really do not know what the reality is. You don't need to know the reality. But this is the meaning. Okay, this Lord, the Lord whom I do not know, whom I want to know, whom I need to know choicelessly, sometime or the other. And that Lord, you know, is said to be the origin of all the beings, which means from which alone all the beings have come into existence, in which reality alone all the beings remain sustained, into which all the beings resolve, and that Lord, actually, I invoke in this. Hope you understand what I'm saying. Even before understanding, is it clear? You are not mechanically, that is, you're not mechanically seeing some given form. How the eyes look, how this look, you know.
So it's a discernible meaning in a form.
No, no, you just, see, you do not know who the Lord is. You do not know who the Lord is, what the Lord is. Yeah. And then you are still doing Shravanam or you have yet to do Shravanam Mananam. You have yet to complete your Shravanam Mananam. So now, meditation means, you must meditating upon what? You should be thinking upon what? Thinking of what? You had to focus attention on something, isn't it? Meditation means you must be focusing your attention of your mind on something. Isn't it? So in keeping with your level of understanding, your choice of meditation must be. Okay, now I do not know the nature of reality because I have not done Shravanam and Mananam. I have not completed Shravanam Mananam or I have not yet done adequate amount of Shravanam and Mananam. Okay, so which means I am not eligible for dwelling upon the nature of reality as my own Swarupam. Okay, I am not eligible to do Arupa Ishvara Dhyanam. I cannot dwell upon the Lord as the formless reality. Because it has to become very clear for me. Then Aneka Rupa Ishvara Dhyanam or Vishwarupa Ishvara Dhyanam, meditating upon the Lord as the whole or all one who appears in all the forms. Even for which, I need an understanding. I don't need to have a given particular form. Just I'm dwelling upon my God. I don't know what the reality is, who that Lord is, but I do. Now, Shastram tells me all that is here is that Lord. That only reality is manifest as everything here, all those forms. The Lord alone appears in the form of everything here. Okay, without you knowing this, it's just you dwell upon this thing, dwell upon this the concept, isn't it? This is only a concept for it. It's not a fact for you. Mm-hmm. Is it clear enough, Bir?
Yes, it's a meaning.
Then, but still, what you're thinking of is what? The fact. Mm-hmm. Even though it's a concept. It's not, you cannot have understood it, but it's a fact. See, thinking of the fact, dwelling upon the fact, having understood the fact, it is contemplation. Dwelling upon the fact, without having understood the fact, again it is aneka rupa dhyanam, isn't it? Now what I'm saying, okay, you can't think of the whole universe as Ishvara. So you just have one form in front of you. You don't need to see that form bead. Okay, you just see, okay, you just do namaskar or something, you sit there. And then, whenever you close your eyes or something, you have some form, but still, what is this form? Am I meditating upon this particular form? Is this form Lord? No, is Lord this form? Ask this question. Is Lord this form? Then why do you have this form then? No, Lord is not this form, but this form is Lord because it symbolizes the Lord. First, it represents the Lord. And who is the Lord? I have yet to understand the nature of the reality, nature of the truth of the Lord. I have yet to understand. I have to complete my Savanaman Mananam. Then what does this Lord stand for? No? What is the Lord then? The Lord is the reality, the whole, from which everything has come into existence and in which everything remains sustained, into which everything resolves. This is a fact I have not understood, but I am dwelling upon that fact. This particular murti or something which I'm thinking of, actually, even though I see this form, I don't mechanically relate to this particular form, how beautiful it looks, no. What it represents, see, dwelling upon what that one form represents becomes the ekarupa dhyanam. Understand? Dwelling upon what that one form symbolizes, represents, is ekarupa dhyanam. See what happens. Ekarupa dhyanam means people think, have one particular form in front of you and see that form itself. See only that form. Not see. Okay. Now take this plant as, you know, object of meditation. You only one form. Is ekarupa Ishvara dhyanam? No. This is ekarupam. You have it as in your altar, as your altar. But you should see it symbol. Of course, this plant is Lord, no doubt about it. For me, everything is Lord, isn't it? This plant is Lord. Lord is not just this plant, but this plant, now I invoked as Ishvara, this is Lord, Ishvara. But when I pray, then I sit, then how do I see this? This stands for Ishvara the whole, who is Prabhu. Who is the reality which is, whose Swarupam is very reality which is endowed with the power of creative power. Uma Sahayaha Parameshwaraha, the exalted Lord of the whole. This represents Ishvara, which is actually the Lord, who is the Lord of the whole. Uma Sahayaha Parameshwaraha Prabhu, then Trilochanaha. I want to finish the meaning of definite. I want to finish it. I don't want to miss it today. Hope you are getting it today. Yes. Is it clear? You please feel free to ask me any questions. Because a lot of Sanskrit words, no? I'll put again together, but anyway, I'll tell you. Then Trilochanaha. Trilochanaha means what? Three-eyed. See, seeing the Lord as a three-eyed. Three-eyed means what here? You know? Generally, we can say, oh, three-eyed means, even though I see this one form, you know, I have one form, but still I see this represents, this form symbolizes the Lord who is the whole. Okay? See, without this form, one form, if you think about it, becomes ekarupa, Ishvara dhyanam. With the form, if you think about it, becomes ekarupa. Trilochanaha means, You know, suppose sometimes you can see the form which having three eyes also. Two eyes like this and one eye something like this. Three eyes. And there again you have to understand here. The right eye. Now these two eyes actually represent our perception of duality. Empirical perception of duality. And this eye stands for the eye of wisdom. No, which represents the resolution of the perception of duality, the knowledge of the non-duality, which means you are not denying anything, isn't it? You are seeing all this, the understanding, eye of wisdom. It's symbolic. No, very symbolic. It's one meaning. Another meaning is what? Okay, the right eye is the sun, left eye is the moon, and the third eye, you know, stands for the fire, which means the three sources of light, and the Lord who is manifest as three sources of light is said to be Trilochanaha. Just thinking, even then you are connecting all the meaning of these words to whom? Ishvara, Bhagavan, the Lord. For you, this so-called Lord, whom you think of, all these are facts, but still you are seeing the Lord as an object of meditation. Therefore, they are only for preparation. Is it clear what I am saying?
Yes.
It's very good. Of course, your practice. It is every meaning of every word states only the fact. Isn't it true? It's all fact only. The meaning of every word reveals the fact about the Lord. So you're dwelling upon the meaning of the words. The word actually it's a Ishvara Dhyanam only. But still you're seeing the Lord as what? An object of meditation. Hope I have not confused you. The Neelakantaha. Neelakantaha, when you say the blue-necked Lord. Kantaha means neck. Neela means blue. See, in mythology, in story we say Lord Shiva really consumed all the poison in order to protect the devas. It's a story. So all the poison he consumed, and he has all the poison, he stopped him in the neck itself. Therefore, his neck looks blue. The story. What does it mean? Why did he consume the poison? Not the poison he protected. Which means, he consumes the poison means, what does it mean? He is the protector. There is no protector other than the Lord, which is the fact. Who else can protect? How do you say Lord is the protector? Understanding the concept of Lord, understanding the truth of the Lord is what actually is the protection, which is wisdom. Therefore, Lord is said to be what? Protector. Actually, the word Neelakantaha implies Lord being the absolute protector. When you think of Lord as who? Not simply mechanically Lord. You understand the fact. Understand? This is a fact. Lord is the absolute protector. There's no other protector. Anybody protects you also from so many things, they're all relative protectors. And who are sent because of again by the Bhagavan Him of order. Because of your own punyam. But it's only relative. If at all something called absolute protection, it is understanding the truth of the Lord. It is understanding the concept of the Lord. Otherwise, we'll be miserable. We'll be blaming Bhagavan also then. We get upset with Bhagavan. Like how we get upset with our own cousins and uncles and friends and relatives. We'll be upset with our own Bhagavan also one day. Wherever we associate, we get upset one day. Isn't that the nature of our... thing. We can't be satisfied. And whoever comes newly, and they'll seem to be, oh, they seem to be, this person is wonderful, fantastic. How long? After some time, you'll be tired of this person. Oh, he's not okay. Again, we make new friends. I'm not saying you should not make friends. That is how the world is. Isn't it? Anyway, so what I say, Neela Kantaha means actually the one who has consumed the poison, therefore, you know, to protect the devas, and therefore one who keeps the poison in his neck, therefore one whose neck looks blue in color, well, he is called a blue-necked lord. It's literal meaning. What is actual meaning? Absolute protector. All the people of righteousness. Then, we can say one more thing also. See, the sky above looks blue in color, isn't it? The sky, if you take the whole universe as the Lord, then sky should be taken as the neck of the Lord. And the region beyond the sky, heaven, etc., form the head of the Lord, which means nothing in the universe, known or unknown, is outside of Bhagavan, the Lord. Even if there is no so-called heaven, that heaven does not exist outside of Ishvara. Okay? Which is that? Which is represented by the head of Ishvara. If everything is Ishvara, the head forms the... Head stands for the heaven, the region beyond the sky, which is unknown. So the sky is represented by what then? Neck. That is why it's blue. Blue-necked Lord means the blue sky forms sands is the neck of the Lord. Which should be understood like what? Then the region beyond the sky, which means all the unknown heavens, etc., they form the head of the Lord. Which means there's nothing which is beyond, outside of, apart from, distant from the Lord. Which also means what? Everything is the Lord. These are all the facts about the Lord which you are thinking of when you are, understand? When you have a given form in front of you. You just keep the form and forget about it and think of the meaning of these words. You can have Christ, you can have Mother Mary, or you can have Rama or Krishna, doesn't matter. A Devi, this must be the understanding. This is Ekarupa Ishvara Dhyanam. Then Prashantaha. Prashantaha means again what? Definitely you do not know the nature of Lord Swarup means reality, which is absolute peace. But you hear, you know, the Lord is for you peaceful. Thank God. Even if you don't know that, think about Lord like that. Know why? We are peaceless and restless. And Lord also is, you can't think of Lord also is restless Lord. How can he protect us? Therefore, Prashantaha. The Lord whom I do not know, is of the nature of peacefulness, is peaceful and absolutely peaceful. The same thing I said earlier also, Prashantaha. There you see, peace is the Swarup of reality. There you know how consciousness is non-disturbable. Isn't it? So all these words. Now how many words? Umasahayaha Parameshwara. Umasahayaha means seeing the Lord as the one who is manifest as material and the efficient cause of the universe, or one who is endowed with the creative power. Then Parameshwara, seeing the Lord as the absolute Lord. Seeing this Lord, not simply Lord, the Lord of the whole. Then Prabhu, seeing the Lord as the source of origin of all the beings, which means, you know what it is. Then Trilochanaha, seeing the Lord as the one who is manifest as the three sources of light, isn't it? And Neelakantaha, I just now told the meaning of this word Neelakantaha, then Prashantaha. Seeing the meaning of these words, when you focus attention on the meaning of these words, it becomes what? Ekarupa Ishvara Dhyanam. Is it clear or not? And in these two meditations, whether these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, whether you see the meaning of these six words, which is the Ekarupa Ishvara Dhyanam, the meditation on one given form, but seeing the Lord as this, or when you see the Anantarupaha or Vibhu, seeing the meaning of those two words, wherein you see the Lord, meditate upon the Lord as the whole. In these two meditations, Lord is still an object of meditation, which is different from you, and you are the meditator. What do you really, the crux point should get is what? There is no meditation at all if the Lord is not the object of your thought. That was very clear. That is why the people who go for so-called meditation courses, where Lord is not at all brought into the picture, they say we go for these meditations. And they are very popular. Because the whole big crowds go, they become famous. Okay, because many people follow doesn't mean that what they're doing is right. You have to think. You don't need to accept it because I'm saying. You have to think for yourself and see the fallacy in what the majority is doing.
When you went to Japan, then you also involved the Lord.
No, Japan, don't mix Japan here. Japan, talk about later on. Now, I'm just talking about this. What is Saguna Brahma Upasanam? And what is... No, I'm just telling. Yeah. What is meditation? What is contemplation? Having presented these words, all these two verses, mainly in the mantra number 6 and mantra number 7, and the Brahmaji has introduced these many words, and seeing the meaning of which... You know, are focusing the attention of the mind upon the meaning of these certain groups of words becomes the meditation upon the Lord, who is of the formless reality, and who is manifest as the whole, or who is, you know, again you see the Lord in one given form. That's Ekarupa Dhyanam or Anekarupa Dhyanam, or it is Vishwarupa Dhyanam, or even Arupa Dhyanam. Now you got the words? All Sanskrit words I'm using. Have you got these words now?
Yeah, in a personal form, and the whole lot, and in
formless. Formless. Yes, very good bit. So I'm repeating so many times. Now, having practiced this meditation, it means everyone should go through all these three types of meditation. Okay, this meditation which precedes or which happens during the Shravanam Mananam, or which can happen only after Shravanam Mananam. All the three, no, we have to go through these steps. And if a person, so having meditated upon, so meditating upon Lord, what is the benefit of this meditation? Now we all should be eager to listen. Only then, this only will really make you know the what will really interest you. What is the benefit? What do I gain out of it? Never ever do anything foolishly. Before doing, see what is there for me. Be intelligently selfish. Okay, that person has that much power, this person has this much power, that person gives that, and he creates that, let the whole Jagat do anything they want to do. When you do something, what is there for you? Isn't it? Be intelligent. What does that mean? Not physically, okay? is going to contribute for my moksha, my jnanam, my fullness, my freedom from sorrow. I have to question that, isn't it? Therefore, here it is. We always have to say the benefit, the palashruti must be there. Only then we will be interested. Therefore, now the Brahmaji presents the benefit of meditation. What is that? Dhyatva. Okay, having meditated upon Lord, means what? Having practiced these three forms of meditation. Ekarupa Ishvara Dhyanam, Anekarupa Ishvara Dhyanam, and Arupa Ishvara Dhyanam. Systematically, then Munihi, the meditator. Munihi means meditator. Gacchati. Munihi gacchati. It means he attains. Who does he attain? He attains the Lord. Munihi gacchati. Gacchati means reaches, attains the Lord. Brahmavit brahmaiva bhavati. The knower of the reality becomes Brahman, the reality. Which means there's no becoming, isn't it? Knowing that you're already Brahman is what? Becoming Brahman. As though becoming Brahman. Therefore, what does he attain here? What is the Brahman? Munihi attains the Lord. Which Lord again? No, he bhutayonim. This meditator who practices this meditation attains the Lord who is bhutayonihi. Bhutayon, the cause of all the beings. The source of all the beings. Again repeated. Not simply attains the source of all the beings means what? He becomes one with Paramatma. Then, and who is that Lord again? The three words. He attains the Lord. Who is that Lord? Bhutayonihi samasta sakshihi tamasah parastat. Samasta sakshihi means what? The one who is of sarva prakashakaha. The one who is of the nature of effulgence. One who is of the nature of knowledge. The one who brings everything to existence through illumination, through knowledge. Our witness of the one who, the seer of everything, which means the one who cannot be seen by anything else, but one who alone sees everything else. Okay? Samasta Sakshi means witness of everything. The only seer obtaining in all the minds. The only knower obtaining in all the minds. The one who witnesses the entire universe. One who brings entire universe into light, bring into existence through knowledge. Is samasta sakshihi. Is it clear? Then tamasav parastat means one who is untainted by ignorance and one who is free from the maya, the power. Which means one who is endowed with the power. At the same time, one who is free from the power means one who is not limited or bound by the power. Is it clear? It's called tamasav parastat. One who is free from ignorance. One who lends existence to the power. The one who lends existence to the ignorance. One who is free from ignorance. One who is free from maya. One who is not limited or bound by maya, the power. Yeah, tamas means ignorance, it stands also for maya. Parastat means, tamas of parastat means one who is beyond. I don't want to use the word beyond. Again, beyond means you get confused. The one who is free from maya shakti. Understand, one who is endowed with the power. Understand, one who is not bound by power. Is it clear? One who is free from ignorance. That Lord. Lord means what now? That Lord whose nature, whose swarupam is free from ignorance, whose swarupam is free from the power, maya shakti, and one who is the very source of all the beings, bhuta yonihi, and who is the witness of everything here. Is it clear? Three words are used again as an adjective for the word Lord. So he attends the Lord means, I told you already, he resolve. We are going to see the next verse will make it very clear. The following verses will really add more clarity to the verses which we have done today. Understand? Today, the meaning is clearer than what it was in the previous class. And the following, when we do the following verses, and you will see much clearer meaning of these verses also. Is it clear? Which means the benefit of this meditation. Okay, benefit of meditation means what? He attains the Lord, he said. Which means he becomes one with the reality. He will understand for him what is bhuta yonihi, what is the cause of the source of everything? Brahman, the reality, the consciousness. What is samasta sakshihi? What is the witness of everything? The witness of everything is consciousness. Who is it who lends existence to the whole universe, who brings the world into existence through knowledge? It is consciousness. Isn't it? Therefore, who is it who is free from maya and ignorance? Consciousness. Is it? Therefore, what is consciousness? Brahma, limitless, infinite reality of the universe. Now, once you meditate, contemplation will result in what? That reality, Brahman, is in fact, everything is that reality. And I am that Brahman. What is I am here? Is it? I, the content of I is that consciousness. And the consciousness, the content of I, improved with the term Atma, is the content of everything here. The substance of everything here, which means this meditation results in Atma and Brahman being identical. Brahman is a different term and Atma is a different term. Two different terms used actually, which actually implies only reality consciousness. Once you've ever, that means all that is here is what is result in what? All that is here is me. When you say all that is here is me, and what is I there for you? There the me, you don't see body as the meaning of the word I. You don't see anything else as meaning of the word I. For you, the meaning of the word I is consciousness. You don't simply say it. You understand it. Shravanam and Mananam will help you understand this fact. You resolve the wrong notion in understanding the right fact. And he's going to say, and then you will say, what, my God? And you're going to say, everything here is Ishvara. The beautiful verse are following. I think it must be very clear. But now what I'll do next class, I will paraphrase. I'll give you the prose order of all the three verses. Then maybe I'll give small notes for that. Dictate some notes. To help you not to get confused. Okay, I explained a lot last class, these class words. Because there you should know which words describe what. Which words stand for what. Bhutayonim gachati. The 8th and the 9th verse present the sarvatma bhavaha. The sarvatma bhavaha means having the vision of all that is here being the Lord. And all that is here being the self. See, having the vision, so this contemplation should result in the understanding of the self being. Practice of this meditation systematically will result in the vision of the self being identical with Paramatma, Brahma. And that vision of the self being identical with Paramatma will give you what? The appreciation, understanding of everything being Ishvara, everything being Brahman, which means everything being the self. Very difficult, isn't it? My God, I am everything. Which when you say I am everything means what? Sarvam Brahma, Aham Brahma, I am Brahman, everything is Brahman, therefore I am everything. Aham Brahma Asmi, Sarvam Brahma, therefore Aham Idam Sarvam. Third step, all that is here is myself. All the self, don't you say myself, can you say all this here is the self. Now, where are you? Resolved. You have cognitively resolved. What have you resolved? Your individuality. When you say all that is here is the self means which is Brahman, which is limitless reality consciousness. You resolve the self in Brahma consciousness already. Understand? And that vision is what? We say Sarvatma Bhavaha. And which is going, once you have Sarvatma Bhava, then what will be the benefit? Okay. What it means by saying having Sarvatma Bhavaha, having the vision of the self being Brahman and thereby seeing everything as the self. That is presented in the following two verses. When I unfold the meaning of those two verses, the present three verses will become clearer. Om Purnamadav Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Tat Sat. Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.